Oh, no, I'm okay. If everybody else is okay, nobody's falling asleep just yet. The other thing I was going to show you is a little story I worked on this last summer. You're all familiar with a columnist at a newspaper. You know, they get to write about whatever they choose to write about. They sort of can then give their commentary, their sort of opinion on whatever it is that they want to write about. So we have a thing at the New York Times that's called a photo column. And it's sort of a similar thing for a photographer. And you get 3 months to work on a project. It's whatever subject you want. It has to be about New York. It has to say something about New York. And it's only one picture that runs every week. So it's an amazing opportunity where you get to focus all your time and energy on making one single picture that's going to run in the newspaper one time every week. So I thought about what I wanted to do, and you know, it's a lot of pressure. You think, oh, what idea do I want to do for 13 weeks? So I thought about in New York. It's a very interesting city because you have very different groups of people living side by side everywhere you go throughout the city. The place where I live is a little neighborhood called Williamsburg. And it's a place where you have one of the oldest and largest communities of Orthodox Jews living next to young, hip, urban, what they call hipsters in New York. And these are the people that are artists and musicians. So you have very different communities living side by side. I'm going too fast, aren't I? So I thought about a way, how could I show these juxtapositions? How could I show these very different kinds of people living side by side, but I can only do it in one picture every week? So I thought about this idea to do double exposures. And that's taking one piece of film. This is actually film, this is not digital. And it's on a large camera. So you take one piece of film, you take a picture, then you take that film out, and then you go to another place, put the film back in, and take a picture again. So you have two images being recorded onto the same piece of film, and you have all of this light and shadow, color, all mixing onto one piece of film. And it's kind of like, it's like alchemy. You have all these things coming in, and you don't know how it's going to come out sometimes. So this first one I showed you was these two streets in two different parts of New York. And one is Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. Maybe, have you heard of it? It's the place where they have all the fancy shops, all the expensive Louis Vuitton and all that stuff. And then they have a street called Fifth Avenue in Brooklyn. And that's where you can find Latino grocery stores and bodegas, ice cream stands, very different neighborhoods. But they both have the same name. So I found, you know, this is a very creative project for me. Like you said, this is not news. But it's one of the beautiful things that we get to do with the paper and be creative. And even though this isn't really telling a story the way a newspaper story tells a story, each picture sort of tells a little story. And so this is the Orthodox man walking past a white wall. And the image of this artwork from one of these artists in the other neighborhood comes through in his clothing. And this is Coney Island, a place that's very famous carnival. And they have a hot dog eating contest every year. It's pretty disgusting. The winner, he's always a Japanese man who eats, I think he's eaten before 100 hot dogs in just a couple of minutes. It's unbelievable. And this is in Central Park. These rock climbers in the park and also penguins in the zoo. And this is Chinatown and Little Italy, that are two neighborhoods that are right next to each other in Manhattan. And one of the ones I did is, instead of looking at two different neighborhoods, I wanted to look at one place and how it changes from the daytime to the nighttime. So this is a park in Manhattan. This is the Brooklyn Bridge. It's a very famous bridge. And at night, they do they present movies out under the stars and under the lights of the city. But in the day, everybody just goes to the park to hang out, and you use it like they use any other park. So I would take my camera on a tripod, and in the day, I would take one picture. The way this film is set up, it's a sheet of film, sort of about that big, and to expose it, you have to pull out a dark slide cover. So what I would do is pull out halfway so that only one portion was exposed. I would take the picture, and then I have to sit and wait all day. And I bring a nice book to read, make sure nobody touches my camera, because if it moves that much, it's over. The whole thing, I have to pack up and go home. So I tried this three different times, and one time it worked. But it's a long time to wait to take one picture. But it's good because I tell photographers 95% of what you do is not taking pictures, it's waiting. It's waiting and watching and observing. This is a neighborhood, an industrial neighborhood called the Meatpacking District in New York. And it's a place where historically, it's where all the butchers live and where they do their work and they distribute the meat. But it's a dying industry in New York, and it's being replaced with fancy hotels, clothing stores, and lingerie shops. So I like this idea of one meat being replaced by a certain other kind of flesh. And you all know Mickey Mouse, right? So normally you wouldn't find Mickey Mouse on a big rat, but these are two rats that you can find in New York. The one big rat, he's a way that union organizers protest at a site that they are not happy about the work practices there. So they bring this big inflatable rat and put him outside and say, "We don't like what you're doing." And then I also took this picture of the Disney store where they have Mickey Mouse. And maybe it's a little too complicated to talk about, but New York has changed so much. It used to be a much more dangerous city, a much grittier city, and places like the Disney Company came in and they transformed it into a place that's much more safe and not quite as interesting. And I just picked up the English language newspaper the other day, actually when I was flying here from Guangzhou. And they had a very interesting story from a guy who had moved to this neighborhood. This is Flushing, Queens. And this neighborhood is now becoming the place with the most Chinese people outside of China in the whole world. It's becoming one of the biggest Chinese neighborhoods. So when I went there, and the neighborhood is also right next to a major airport. So when I went there, it always reminded me of when I had visited Hong Kong 10 years ago, when what's the name of the airport that used to be there? I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the airport, but there used to be the airport right in the middle of Hong Kong. And so the planes would fly over so low, and you could be walking around in Kowloon and see this plane come over your head. It was amazing. So this place in New York, so far away from China, so far away from Hong Kong, reminded me so much of this place that I had been to so long ago. So I wanted to make a picture like that.
Is this a real plane?
Yeah, so this is, with my camera, I'm at the airport taking pictures of the planes as they go over. And then this is all double exposure. All of these ones are double exposures. So this is not done in Photoshop, this is not done with digital, it's all done on a piece of film. And this is again from my home neighborhood in Williamsburg. And this is at the site of the World Trade Center, where the two towers used to stand. And I would always think about how New York has changed so much. When I always come home after a trip like this to New York, I look at the skyline, and where the skyline is, these two towers used to stand so tall over all of New York. They were the biggest and most impressive buildings that you could see. And every time I come to New York, I'm so sad when I look at that horizon. I see those buildings missing, and it reminds me of how everything has changed. So I wanted to take a picture that that spoke about that memory. And this is actually one of the buildings from the World Trade Center complex in the back there, and it's reflected in the glass of a hotel. So there's, it's almost like triple exposure. There's a double within one, and then also a double exposure. And for the final piece on this, and this is kind of where I got the name for the piece, was called Neighbors. It's about people who live next to each other. So I found a group of artists who walk around in these black costumes, and they're in the shape of man and woman, very simple forms, but all black. And so they walk around the neighborhood and they just interact with people, and this is their form of artwork. So I photographed them in their neighborhood, and for the second exposures, I took all these images of the textures and colors and patterns that make that neighborhood. So I thought it was a good way to close out the series. And it's only about 3 or 4 minutes long. Oh, this is a... Can you guys see this picture? So sometimes we get to see really interesting things. This is called a lung volume reduction surgery. So her lungs had become so saturated with fluids that she could no longer breathe properly. So they have to go in and actually cut out parts of her lungs. But I actually get to photograph this whole process, and really, really incredible.
Take by video or camera?
Oh, I'm taking with my camera. I got a little sick, though. This is digital, yeah. And this is a mariachi protest. I don't know if you know the kind of Mexican musicians protesting for better wages. And New Year's Eve in New York City. Sometimes you look for little, I don't know, these funny little moments. If you make somebody laugh, this is sort of ridiculous. These two people ended up sitting next to each other. These are all from assignments. But actually, I think I'll wrap it up there, and I want to show you this other thing, because I think it'll be kind of fun to see. So what I'm going to show you is actually, it's one day on the campaign trail. So I've shown you all these photos so far, and you sort of... When you see one photo, you really have no idea what goes into making that one photo. So what I'm going to show you is what it's like to be out on the campaign for one entire day. And I'm going to show you every single photo that I took that day. And I'm going to show it to you very fast. So you're going to get to see all my mistakes, all my bad exposures. And you get to see how many bad pictures sometimes you have to take just to get one good one. So that kind of gives you an idea of, you know, what it takes to get one picture in the New York Times. It's not easy. I think I covered that campaign from, you know, from about January. I covered the campaigns from January up through November, so a good 11 months. And during that time, maybe I had three front page images like that. It's very tough, and the New York Times is covering news from all over the world, and to get your picture on the front page is difficult, and a lot of pictures go into making that that just never see the light of day.
So you did the, what do you call it, flash or streaming?
I did this in QuickTime, actually. Uh-huh. QuickTime, yeah.
So all by pictures, no video?
No video. This is... Every single one of these pictures that I show you is taken with this camera or my other. I have two of these, and it doesn't shoot very fast. It shoots like this. That's about as fast as it goes. So, you know, these weren't pictures that were taken like a video camera. This is 1,700 photos that every time I push the button, I'm trying to make a picture that maybe is a little bit better than the last one, maybe a little bit better than the last one. Over and over and over until they stop getting any better. So maybe we could do some questions. Does that sound okay? Right. That's a good question to ask after this. When I was on the campaign, I estimated 90,000 pictures, and out of that 90,000, maybe we ran 100 or 150 in the paper. And in the website over that time, so you take a lot of pictures. Picking the best picture is a very difficult skill. It's something that you have to constantly think about. You think about it as you're shooting. You think about also not just what is your favorite picture, what is the most beautiful picture. You think about what picture tells the story best, what picture goes best with the day's news, or I think that's the best way to say it. Which picture really tells the story? As far as how to choose that, it's a skill that I think you develop over time too, and you know, you have to work with editors who can teach you that skill too. Now, the way that works is, you know, say covering a campaign or many other stories that I work on. I go out shooting. I have my backpack that has my computer in it, and I have a Wi-Fi card or a cellular card. And so when I'm done taking my pictures, I look through, and I'm the person that's selecting maybe 10 pictures to send back to the New York Times. I want to give them a good choice of things to look at, but I don't want to give them any bad picture. I don't want to give them any picture that I wouldn't want to run in the newspaper. So I try to keep it as tight as possible, and only give them the best pictures. But something like covering the campaign, sometimes they have a better perspective than I do. And I can choose the pictures that I think are best from my perspective, but they have a better understanding because they're taking the reporting from this campaign, from the McCain campaign, from all the other aspects, and they can figure out what is the best news, what is the best way to show the day's news that day. And maybe I think, I've got a great picture today. This happened all the time. I would think, I've got a great picture today, and I hope this runs on the front page. I mean, just because when you take pictures, you want people to see them. But they think, you know, and rightfully so, they know that today's news, it's not about the campaign. It's about what's happening in Iraq, or it's about what's happening in Afghanistan, or maybe the McCain camp has done something that's really important and they need to put that picture. And it doesn't matter that I have a good picture or that I think I have a good picture, because they know really what the news of the day is.
Do you think the editor make the right choice?
Yeah, no, I think 9 times out of 10 they make the right choice. You know, that choice of news judgment, I think they're usually on the ball. Sometimes I like to think that I know the better picture, but maybe it's because I just like it myself. Yeah, the good thing about the web is that we get to run a lot more pictures. So sometimes if a picture that I like wouldn't end up in the newspaper, we could run it in a slideshow that next day.